Thanks for tuning in to All About Jack, a podcast feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. I'm William O'Flaherty. At the time I'm releasing this show, it was 1 year ago this month that Dr. Christopher Mitchell died. At the time, this program was hosted at another location, and so I thought this anniversary is an appropriate time to post it at where my audio files can now be found. As you listen, keep in mind this podcast was first released on July 16, 2014, and Dr. Mitchell died July 10th. The program today releases less than a week since news that Dr. Christopher Mitchell unexpectedly died. He had worked for nearly 20 years as the director of the Marion E. Wade Center at Wheaton College that houses the largest collection of works by and about C.S. Lewis in the U.S. Most recently, he was a professor at Biola University in California. I was able to reach out to a half a dozen friends who knew Chris well and agreed to share some thoughts about him in a tribute to his life. They are Drs. Bruce Edwards, Don King, James Como, Diana Glyer, Bruce Johnson, and Andrew Lazo. What I basically asked them to do was to imagine they were standing up at a service or among other friends who knew Chris to express how much Chris meant to them and or a favorite memory about him. If you knew Chris yourself or have been impacted by his life and want to express it, you can go to a special Facebook memorial page I created. Follow the link in the show notes at EssentialCSLewis.com. In determining the order to play back their thoughts, I just went with the order I recorded them, and except for the first two, none of them had the chance to hear anyone else's thoughts. I'm simply going to announce the name of each person before they share their thoughts. Up first is Dr. Bruce Edwards.
Well, hearing the news of any beloved friend and colleague is always a shock when it involves somebody that you feel indebted to. And hearing about Chris's passing and reflecting almost immediately on what he has meant to me personally and as a friend and confidant, there's a tremendous loss. And there's a tremendous loss not only for the sake of his scholarship and his years of editorial work on behalf of the Wade Center, but as a friend and as a brother in Christ. And I just want to share an anecdote. I haven't done a lot of work at the Wade over the years, but every time that I have come to the Wade, you know, Chris was always a smiling and considerate presence. He was obviously in demand and doing 12 things at once. But a couple of years ago, my dad passed away, and he and another friend of mine, Jerry Root, took a pilgrimage to my house in Ohio. We had lots of things to talk about, but one of the things they came for was just to kind of cheer me up and to give me some hope and some reality. And at that, on that trip, I can't tell you what their coming meant to me, and particularly some of the things that Chris shared. Chris shared a lot of personal stuff about his upbringing in Oregon and some of the things that he faced in his family and all that God brought him through. And that very personal touch and that sharing of faith was just so tremendous and meant so much to me at a crucial time in my sort of late adulthood and fatherhood of my own children and grandchildren. And what I want to emphasize is that's the same kind of personal and honest and yet very experienced voice he brought to everything, whether it was working at the Wade or sharing insights into C.S. Lewis, which is, of course, what mainly brought us together. And over the years, I think I knew Chris over 20 years. I knew Chris even before he became director of the Wade. And he always shared with such earnestness, all of that anchored in his tremendous faith in Christ. I am touched even today in looking over some of the correspondence that Chris and I had over the last few years, in particularly, and spent time with him in Cambridge at a conference, spent time with him in Lille, France at a conference. And he was so genuine and so personable and such an encourager that that's one of the things I want to register upon hearing of his passing.
Next is Dr. Don King.
Well, I'm delighted to be able to say a few words about Chris Mitchell, a person that I have just tremendous respect for. And truly, like many people, there's a hole in my heart because Chris was such a delightful person. I knew Chris over about 20 years. I probably made over a dozen extended trips to the Wade Center. And at almost every visit, Chris was there. He would usually come down mid-morning while I was working. He was always friendly, curious, wondering what I was working on, bright, thoughtful, reflective, very hospitable. In fact, usually before our little talk was over, he would invite me out to lunch. And so he would pick a favorite place in Wheaton and take me out to eat there. And we just had a number of wonderful times together. And like Bruce Edwards has said, Chris, my relationship with Chris was more just than just being a fellow Lewis or Inkling scholar. In many of our conversations together, we talked about our families, our children. We prayed together. In some instances, we, with our families, were going through very similar kinds of circumstances. So it was just really refreshing for me to find a fellow believer there at the Wade Center who wanted to talk about what was going on in my life, not just about Lewis-related things. I have a lot of favorite memories of Chris. I've already mentioned the many meals that we shared together. But I invited him to come to Montreat and do a series of talks on Lewis somewhere around 2005, I think it was. And we had a great time together. He gave a series of about five or six talks. And my favorite memory, though, is when we were sitting out on the porch of where we had put him up, a place called the Georgia Lodge here in Montreat. Chris was in a rocking chair. He had a great big grin on his face, and he was just looking over the quiet valley on a fall evening, a cool, crisp fall evening. And he said, you know, I think I could just stay here forever. Of course, I would have loved for him to stay at Montreat forever, but of course it didn't work out that way. But we just had so many good times together that I genuinely saw him as a person who was committed to Jesus Christ, who loved his Lord, who loved what he was doing. And it was a very distinct pleasure for me and an honor to have spent not a lot of time with Chris, but several times of great quality fellowship and interaction. We are all, of course, the poorer with the loss of Chris, and yet he's with the Lord, and we can take a good deal of comfort in that, and we know that one day we'll see him.
Here's Dr. James Como.
Like many other people, I was utterly devastated and bereft by the news of Chris's death so suddenly, so unaccountably. We had spoken just before he left on vacation. As a matter of fact, he was looking forward to it. He loved his family so dearly, and we'd get some fishing in. And Chris, in a nutshell, was a prince among men. Really, if we lived in another age, in another place, he would have been an actual prince. He was a model, and there's a real gaping wound now with him gone. He had attributes of intellect and character and temperament and spirit, which in combination I have not known really in anyone else. His mind was beautifully stocked. It was keen, but he never showed it off. His interest was in other people. and I admired him for that. I mean, really admired him. There were a few people I can say that I admire so unconditionally. He was one of them for that. He always referred to us as brothers. I was very flattered by that reference. Of course, he reminded me that I was the older brother, and as such, he looked up to me for wisdom. It was the older part that always amused me. I was older than Chris. And we thought of ourselves as brothers in many ways. Of course, Christian brothers, more than anything else, but also brothers with common interests. We were together, a handful of times. I remember Chris attended a weekend of the C.S. Lewis Society, and I picked him up at the airport, LaGuardia Airport, and we stopped for breakfast at a diner. And he was amused to see that the diner had been voted the best diner in Queens for 20-something years in a row. And this was on the placemat, which he took to the owner to be signed and dated. He photographed it and sent it to his best friend, his oldest friend, who was a native of Queens, just to let the man know that he, Chris, had eaten at this diner. I mean, he was just whimsical in that way and very spontaneous. After the conference, Chris allowed that he hadn't ever seen much of New York, so I contrived with a friend of mine to give him a tour of New York City. And my friend who drove and knows the place like the back of his hand drove us around for about 3 hours and pointed things out to Chris. And, of course, he was just so out of himself. It was Chris's usual location. He was the least self-centered human being I've ever known. He occupied really a central position and had lots of authority and influence there. But you wouldn't have known it. You wouldn't have known it. My wife Alexandra and I had the pleasure of being dinner guests of Chris's and Julie's at their home in Wheaton for a very big event. It was Walter Hooper receiving the Lifetime Achievement Award of the Wade Center. And this was important to Walter. It was important to me. I've known Walter for over 40 years, that he would get this award from Wade, and that his picture would be hung there next to Clyde Kilby's was an enormously significant achievement. And there's a backstory here, which I won't go into, but there was some controversy that had prevented such a thing from happening. But Chris, with all the charity that anybody ever brought to a case, made sure that Walter got the recognition he deserved. And there they are, the two great godfathers of C.S. Lewis studies, hanging in portrait together on the wall at Wade Center. What an achievement. I would call Chris a diplomat, except that word implies a kind of contrivance. And that would completely contradict everything that's true about Chris. There was nothing contrived about this man. Of course, as an administrator, he planned. He had objectives and goals and that sort of thing. But his sincerity with respect to the goodness of those goals and the transparency of his pursuit of those goals contradicts everything we know about the diplomat, the classic diplomat. We were together at St. Patrick's Cathedral. And, you know, as we know, Chris was not a Catholic. I am a Catholic. He was exceedingly reverential. And I asked him about being there in the cathedral. And he said to me, "Jim, we are in a holy place. I believe that there are physical locations which are at the intersection of our world and eternity. And this is one of them." What a wonderful thing to know and to say. We talked baseball. He loved baseball. He had played baseball. The same is true of me, and we could talk about that. We talked about books. Of course, he was an exceedingly well-read, well-educated man. And I, of course, was surprised that he was leaving Wade. But, you know, everything has its season, and he was so looking forward to his move to California with his beloved wife, he would always, always talk about Julia and his family and his grandchildren and seeing them. This is something else, of course, we had in common. And the last contact I had with Chris was when he called me to visit the annual Petoskey Lewis Festival in Michigan. He wanted me there. There was a new film coming out. He wanted me to comment on that film. He wanted me to talk about Lewis on myth, faith, and the imagination, which is the subject of the film, Lewis's famous walk in the woods with Tolkien and Hugo Dyson. And I had my reservations about it. He said, Jim, listen, just think. The last time we went to Petoskey together, in the company of Walter Hooper, by the way, after that ceremony at Wade, we had the wonderful drive all the way from Chicago up to Petoskey. And didn't we have fun? Kim Gilnick was with us, a wonderful, wonderful man, just a prince himself, really, who looks after things in Oxford from time to time. And I remember that one of the highlights of the year, really one of the highlights of a life in C.S. Lewis, was that ride with Chris up there. It was amusing, it was deep, it was moving, and never, never for a minute dull. And that is what made me say yes to the invitation to go this year to Petoskey, the prospect of being able to see my friend and his enthusiasm at seeing me. My goodness, what a compliment it was. How deeply, deeply, deeply flattered I am to think that a man like Chris Mitchell held me in high esteem and close to his heart. This is the kind of thing people say, you'll get over this, you'll get over that. I've had losses in my life, and I can say there are some you come to terms with, but you never get over. And this is one that those who knew Chris will never, ever get over.
Dr. Diana Glier shares her thoughts.
I got to know Chris Mitchell when he was director of the Wade Center. When you're working there as a scholar, you spend a lot of time sifting through fragments, a lot of time looking for obscure quotations. Chris was always very generous and kind and encouraging, very, very generous with his time. And I really appreciated getting to know him as we worked side by side there at the Wade Center on a number of projects. Chris was the director of the Wade Center when I was the chair of the C.S. Lewis Centenary Conference at Wheaton. And his help and his seamless coordination between what we were trying to do as the Mythopoeic Society in honoring Lewis's legacy and what the Wade Center had in mind for that event was really, really extraordinary. So I met Chris by working with him as a scholar and got to know him better through a number of different conferences and events. But when I think about Chris and I think about getting to know him, I would say that probably the most important events were his annual visits to speak to my C.S. Lewis class at Azusa Pacific University. Chris happened to come through this way most every year, and so he would volunteer to come and talk to my students about C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity. My students have a lot of struggles with that book. There are lots of ways that they love it. But one of the things that really puzzles my students is Lewis's insistence on the creeds of the church as being an important, non-negotiable core for Christian faith. And so Chris would come and he would weave together some reflections on the importance of church history, and talk about how the creeds are necessary and important for giving structure and stability to our common life, our life as worshipers of Jesus as we enter into that community together. And the students loved to hear him talk, and his insight and his wisdom and his ability to connect the eternal truth of the gospel message with these college students always really, really impressed me. So that's how I remember Chris best. I remember him bent over the text, talking eagerly with these students and giving them his full attention, his very best attention. I would say that as a scholar, Chris made a really significant contribution in helping us to understand Lewis's character. Sometimes Lewis is portrayed as full of bluff and bluster, full of argument and debate. Lewis was a brilliant arguer. He was a great debater. But a lot of times people miss the spirit with which Lewis undertook these things. And one of the things I loved about Chris Mitchell is his ability to emphasize Lewis's humility and his sacrifice that were a result of Lewis's emphasis on putting Christ first and being vocal about his faith, even when it wasn't popular and when it wasn't helpful for him from a career point of view. Chris was really good at that. The news of Chris's death has really hit us all very hard. It's so shocking. It's such a tremendous loss. And so I've been thinking quite a bit about what was Chris Mitchell's legacy. What was it that he was uniquely gifted at for those of us who are part of the Lewis community? If we were going to continue to devote ourselves to living out Chris Mitchell's legacy, what would that look like? And I guess I would have to say that Chris had an unusual talent for connecting people who had different points of views and perspectives, connecting people who didn't live very close to each other, connecting people who would bring an interesting and fresh perspective to whatever topic they were talking about. In lots of ways, Chris was a peacemaker. And I wonder, now that he's passed, if we shouldn't pick up that legacy and work a little harder at making connections, at meeting together more often, at putting aside differences and debates, and working a little harder at encouraging one another and helping one another in the work that God's called us to do.
Next is Dr. Bruce Johnson.
The news of Chris's passing came as a shock to me, as it did to so many. And I've been reflecting on the remarkable achievement of his life. It's not just his personality, which was very impressive, or his scholarship, but what he did with that. Chris spoke about what he called sometimes the undiscovered C.S. Lewis, or the unexplored C.S. Lewis. And he had a handle on the work that needed to be done in Lewis studies, things like more nuanced approach to different aspects of his life or his work. And knowing that, he worked with a great team at the Wade Center over almost two decades to craft the infrastructure for that work that is yet to be done, to have all the infrastructure in place. When he started at the Wade Center, it was a time when Kay Lundskog had come out with some of her work, and the Lewis community was really divided. And because of Chris's affable personality, his manner with people, his really enjoyment of being with people and exchange of ideas, he was able to really bring together what was a pretty fractured state of things. And I think that we need to appreciate that. A lot of what he did by enabling other people to use their gifts and talents. And I think that speaks very well to the measure of the man he was.
Finally, Andrew Lazo shares his reflections.
I'm grateful to be asked to offer a few words about Chris Mitchell, who was a sweet, kind, generous, childlike man. And I hardly know of anybody more full of life than he, which is why this sudden grief strikes me as such a tragedy. Chris was always so joyful, but at the same time so competent and so knowledgeable. Wide and deep was his range, and his energy was always so high. And it was a gift to get to know him over the years. I've been visiting the Wade since the late 1990s, and every time since Chris has been there, he'd certainly made time for me at lunch. He would take me out to breakfast. We'd have times in his house, in his man cave, or smoking a pipe, just times to be together. And he, although he was incredibly busy, always showed me such generous hospitality and welcomed me to whatever he had to offer. There was actually one time where Chris was unavailable, and it proved to be a watershed moment in my life. I was visiting the Wade in 2005. It was the year that Chris actually suggested that that Marianne Femister and I worked together on Mere Christians, and his glad suggestion proved to come to fruition. That was also the week that Walter Hooper came to the Wade Center, and he brought with him Lewis's teapot and his academic robes to Wheaton College. And it was my first chance to meet Walter Hooper and to give him thanks in person for the lifelong debt that I owed him. I've shared this elsewhere, but on a Wednesday evening of the week that I was there, Chris came to me shortly before the Wade closed up for the day and said, "Andrew, I've got a problem. I wonder if you can help me." And said, "Sure, Chris, of course, anything." And Chris said, "Well, I have an obligation tonight, and I'm unable to take Walter Hooper to dinner. Would you be willing to take Walter to dinner for me?" And, of course, it was my first chance to really get to know Walter and found a wonderful conversationalist. But Chris's generosity towards me allowed me to start a friendship with Walter that has continued ever since. The commitment, the obligation that kept Chris from taking Walter Hooper out to dinner was he had to go to his son's soccer game. And of course, he didn't have to. He just delighted to. And that kind of fatherly goodness pervaded everything that Chris did. He had such a good sense of our Heavenly Father. And certainly as a husband and a father, those were obviously his first priorities. He took no greater joy than showing me around his home and introducing me to Julie and to his children. He did, though, have some joy showing me around the Wade Center. And when they moved to the new building, he took me downstairs one day and opened up a flat drawer and handed me an illustration from an original Pauline Baynes illustration from The Silver Chair. It was incredible. And Chris was so delighted at the generosity that he was able to pastor, to shepherd, to guardian over all of those years. I'm grateful for Chris. He was such a shining light in that place. I had the chance, my first time meeting Chris, to introduce him to Phil Keggy. Some of you may know that Phil Keggy was the man who introduced me to C.S. Lewis as an adult. And he was in town at the end of the week, a week of research. And so Dr. Steve Mosier and Chris Mitchell and I saddled up and went down to the Moody Bible Institute. And of course, Chris had been a fan of Phil's for many years. And it was such a thrill to be able to introduce those two amazing, childlike, talented, loving, godly men to each other. And I understand that a good friendship developed between them over the years. I was so thankful to have been in the room. There's so much to say, mostly about the great loss. And I'll be reflecting on that loss in Oxford and Cambridge next week as I speak for the C.S. Lewis Foundation at Oxbridge. But I want to maybe end my remarks with something that Laura Schmidt from the Wade Center said to me an hour ago, and it seems to be poignantly true. She said, if ever there was anyone ready for heaven, it was Chris. And the ironic thing is that he seemed so present in this world. And perhaps that's the great lesson from Chris Mitchell, to be heavenly minded and faithfully present in this, our grievous and hurting world. And he offered such light to me, and his legacy will continue. I'd encourage those who knew Chris, even those who didn't know Chris, to live on in his legacy, first by living a godly life, of course. But also, I'd urge them to continue to support the work of the Marion E. Wade Center at Wheaton College. Chris directed that wonderful place and built many bridges during the almost 20 years that he shepherded that wonderful facility. And the work there goes on. Your listeners can drop in and poke their heads in the wardrobe or come for a week of research and see original documents. The Wade Center is unique in all the world. And Chris was a part of developing the greatness of that place. And so I'd encourage those who are listening to take advantage of that. Get to Chicago, spend a day, spend a week at Wheaton in the Wade Center and see that place that Chris gave so much of his life to. I want to give my deepest condolences to Julie and the children and to all of those of us who loved and knew Chris. And I just pray that I can be as ready for heaven when God calls me home as Chris was when he left.